Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. All right, welcome to our pre-Thanksgiving podcast.
Yes, that's right. You are probably thawing something right now if you're a traditional Thanksgiving-ish
right.
person.
Yes.
You know, I've noticed over recent years that there's fewer and fewer people who just want turkey.
It's true.
Right? They want something more unusual or ham, or obviously there's you can do anything, but what are you doing this year, Randy?
Still traditional, actually. I do, last couple of years, I do a Friendsgiving thing.
Yep.
And I go to Interstellar Barbecue,
which
I get, they do a pineapple sage glazed ham.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite delicious. And their Gouda mac and cheese, which is smoked, mm-hmm. and their smoked scalloped potatoes. I get all that stuff. And then I have people bring stuff. But inevitably, every year, someone wants a turkey. My mom was making a turkey this year. Last year was the year someone else. Like, everybody wants the turkey. And I'm like, okay, we can have a turkey, but like, we don't need the turkey.
Right.
And turkey's good. I like turkey.
Yeah. I think America just got traditioned out a little bit.
Yeah, it's just, there's the thing. I can eat ham without having to pour gravy on it to make it palatable. Turkey needs gravy.
But it makes it so delicious. It's amazing.
It is true.
And with stuffing. By the way, speaking of changing traditions, y'all may notice a distinct lack of Nick today.
Maybe he's being quiet.
We apologize, but Nick has been destroyed.
Nick is here. He's just going to be quiet the entire podcast. He's not going to say a word.
Nick is actually sailing the ocean blue.
Yes, he is. He's on a family vacation.
There's a family thing afoot.
Right.
He picked the week of Black Friday to do it.
Yes,
wacky.
He did.
Mm-hmm. Or actually, yep. I'm going to suspect maybe they picked it.
They picked it, and he was like, you know, my boss is going to kill me. And I did, and that's why he's not on the podcast.
That's right. So while we're doing the podcast, go ahead and lament Nick if you must.
I guess what we're saying is Nick's dead.
Messages us to say, we're sorry Nick is dead, but he did deserve it for skipping out during Thanksgiving week.
That's all we ask. By the way, I believe this is the...
And he'll be back next week.
This is the third or fourth time we've killed Nick off on this podcast.
That's right. You know, the gimmick might be getting old, but if it worked for Superman...
That's right.
It'll work for us.
Then we'll have four Nicks, and then one will be in a battle suit,
right.
one will be a cyborg.
And we'll be cool teen Nick.
We'll be cool teen Nick.
That's right.
And we'll be black Nick, which is not... That's inappropriate.
Maybe awkward.
What was the four? Oh, Eradicator. Kryptonian Nick.
but yeah, Nick will be back next week to be like, what did y'all do?
Yes. That's what he does.
Why are people sending me condolences? And
why did someone send me a picture of me as Shaquille O'Neal? What happened?
Oh, no. Let's see.
Shaq Nick.
Yes, no, I was just trying to think of, like, games and topics so
yes.
we can move on.
So we do have topics to talk about. Reminder again, we're doing the extended holiday hours. We're going to be open 8 p.m. starting on Friday. So for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we'll be open until 8 p.m. instead of 7 p.m.
Right, a little extended weekend hours so you can get in after work or after you've taken a big nappy poo.
Yes, we'll see how that goes. You know, we're gonna test it out. It may go through the entire holiday season.
Yep.
It may go like 2 weeks, and we're like, oh, nobody's coming?
Yeah.
We're going to go back to 7.
If we find it's helpful, we continue. If we find that it's just a drag, we won't.
Exactly. We also have our Black Friday sale coming up on Friday.
Yep.
Which is our usual, when you spend $25, you get a free mini pack of dice.
Yes.
Or our blind dice packs. When you spend $50, you get $10 in owlbear coin.
Yes.
Every $50 you spend, you get a $10 Albert coin that you can use starting the next day, or you can give that out as gift cards, as our gift card kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also worth noting that this year we are doing $50 statues.
Yes, that's a pretty big price drop for
most
them.
Most of them are $75 to $100.
Right. So this would be a great time to stock up on them, get them for friends, get them for yourself.
Get them for strangers.
Yeah,
just go out and hand a person in the street. Say, here. Here's a Venom, sir.
Take that to a homeless shelter.
Yes.
Okay, maybe not.
Maybe not. Here, sir, have this chasm statue.
You know, I've been reminded recently is people who are donating to, like, food banks and stuff
yep.
like that it really, money, as opposed to your, like, expired or nearly expired lima
yes.
beans,
yes.
is really what they're looking for.
Yes. Money or Venom statues.
That gives them a great options. But if you want to throw in a Venom statue, they probably wouldn't turn you down. They'll They'll before they eat, they will tribute the founder of the feast and toast the Venom statue.
Yes. All hail Lord Null.
This is for God Eddie Brock. Symbiotes.
Anyway, all the statues are $50, which means you buy a statue, you also get an Albert coin.
Oh, that's true.
So you buy two statues, two Albert coins. Three statues, you guessed it, three Albert coins. You buy 10 statues, 10 Albert coins.
What about 20?
20 Albert coins, Dave.
Well, at a certain point, we'd run out of statues.
That's true.
I'm the kid from Stand By Me.
If you come in and buy all of our statues, we might give you an extra Albert coin.
I think we will.
Yeah,
actually,
we will.
Yeah, I'm going to just promise it.
All the statues.
I will, even if the store doesn't, I'll buy that.
Dave will personally buy you an Albert coin.
Yes. We'll close early.
And we'll close early. Also of note, we've joined Blue Sky, the Twitter killer.
Yep. We certainly hope it is.
We don't post a lot there, but we are posting there. We're starting to post some stuff.
We're getting around to it.
Yep. So if you are on Blue Sky, follow us on Blue Sky. And with that, let's talk about games for the week.
Okay. Yeah.
So I want to mention, although it may be past the point at this point, we got the Thunder Road Vendetta, one of my favorite board games.
Mm-hmm.
We got the store level Kickstarter in.
Oh, cool.
And so we got like the big deluxe version and all the expansions. And as we post this, I believe we have two expansions left.
Right. Yeah.
It went kind of crazy.
People like that game, apparently.
But if you have the main game and you're looking for expansions, as of right now as we record this, we have the expansions that is Carnage of Devil's Road, which has all the different road tiles, including the fire rules. And we have Carnival of Carnage, which is the newest expansion, which turns it into more of like a arena kind of thing.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Thunder... Not... What's
Well, like, Thunderdome in the movie, but with, yeah, with something with cars.
Yeah, so it's like that.
Yeah, I can't think of a vehicular one that I know of.
It does homage Tina Turner's character.
Yes, I saw that. So, these guys seem to know what's what about their post-apocalyptic driving combat.
We also got, speaking of sort of direct order stuff, we got the One-Shot Wonders, if y'all know,
it's an RPG, like a third-party RPG supplement.
Yeah, it is. It's compatible with both Pathfinder and D&D.
Yep.
I think it's kind of rules neutral, to be honest.
Yeah, although it speaks in the terminology
fantasy,
of those, and it even, like, I think might mention certain spells and like, you know, potions and things.
But it's a really swanky hardcover with, like, a whole bunch of adventures in it.
Yes.
One night, one shot with adventures.
Yeah, and there's actually a great series of, like, indexes for the adventures, so that it's, like, if you want to do a cold adventure, if you want to do a cozy adventure, if you want to do a spooky adventure and all this. It's basically they have tags on them,
yep,
and they have a few pages where they list them by their tags, so you kind of know what's what. And you could either use it to kind of fill out an existing campaign or series of adventures, or just run a one-night one-shot. It has cool art and stuff like that,
yep,
too. It was a big thing for us last year.
We've had it twice, and every time it's sold out. This is one of my favorite third-party supplements.
Yeah, really good.
We also got from them their Characters Toolkit and their Game Master's Toolkit, which are a set of tables, like random tables.
Oh, nice.
If you're a DM or you're a building character. My kid has the character one. He loves using it all the time to make characters with.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically just a spiral-bound collection of a whole bunch of random tables.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, there's a Game Master version and a character one.
I know from having done a lot of rolling on ridiculous and cool tables for the various Mork Borg games, Pirate Borg and Cyborg and all that stuff, that it can be a lot of fun. I do like that chaos a little bit.
And then we got a bunch of stuff from Asmodee. They had a big release the week last week.
Mm-hmm.
Splendor Silk Robe, which is a new expansion for the Splendor game, which is one of my favorite games.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good game. The Arkham Horror RPG. We've had the starter kit.
This
is the rule book.
Nice. This was, I think, something that we're all a little surprised about, because Call of Cthulhu is already a successful Lovecraftian RPG. And then, they put out the Arkham Horror one, which is, I think, it is a competitor for it. But I gather kind of does its own thing differently, but always looked well-packaged and well-designed.
And it uses the rules from Star Wars, the Edge system.
Ah, interesting. So that's the one where you're going to make a roll and you're going to get an advantage or disadvantage, and also complication or whatever or not.
Yeah, for
something
sure.
Like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that does sound cool.
We've got the Star Trek Lower Decks Buffer Time.
Yep.
This is a push-your-luck co-op game for 2 to 6 players. I believe you're sort of like trying to trap things in the buffer of the transporter.
Okay, okay.
And it's got the Lower Decks sense of humor and the art, that kind of thing.
Good kind of quick play game, good, I would imagine.
Yeah, like $20. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We got Lego Monkey Palace. This is a Lego game. You actually use Legos to build, you like build a structure.
That is cool.
Yeah. This looks very cool. It's their first official like Lego board game.
I would venture to guess not their last.
Yeah, probably not. Also, it does come with a bonus skull accessory, which has just a Lego skull and some card and a card to explain what the rules are.
Okay, yeah, that's nice.
So that's a limited run thing. We got Fromage, which was one of my favorite games I played at BGGCon. I talked about it last week. Basically, it is a little wheel, you know, like a wheel of cheese.
Yep.
Divided into 4 segments, like you would with cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And each segment is a different mini game.
Oh, right.
And so you're placing, you've got 3 little cheese wedges that represent your workers, and you're placing them on these things, whether it's like you're trying to do cheese pairings by getting 2 spots on a table, or you're trying to control regions by being the person supplying these regions.
Okay.
Or you're trying to make cheese. And there's one other. But basically, you put your little guys down, you get to put 2 of them down, and then you rotate the wheel, and then you're on the other mini game.
Okay.
And your pieces look like cheese wedges. And so when you put them down, they will point a certain way.
Uh-huh.
And when they're pointing back at you, that's when you get that worker back.
Oh, interesting.
So if you buy like a gold cheese, it might be like 3 turns before you get that guy back.
Okay.
But if you buy like this a bronze, you'll get him back immediately. So you get like, well, I want this really good cheese, which means I'm going to have to give up this worker for like 2 rounds.
It reminds me in some ways of the kind of decisions made in like Sushi Go.
Yeah.
And things like that as you pass around cards and try and make various groupings.
Yeah.
But obviously, definitely its own thing. Sushi Go doesn't have
it's the a worker placement game. Yeah. But yeah, really, really fun.
Fromage.
And looks great. You know, it's a good looking game. That was definitely one of my favorite things.
Mm-hmm.
Res Arcana Duo. Res Arcana is a game that's really popular. This is their 2-player version, which you can also use as an add-on to Res Arcana.
Okay.
Some more cards, a deck builder. A game called Pixies, which I don't know much about. It's just a little game from Asmodee. It's like a little $15 game. And you are choosing cards, placing in the right place, and keeping an eye on your opponents. So you are trying to either emerge from a flower or shelter in the hollow of a tree.
Okay.
And you want to sort of reveal some, but not reveal all of them. So,
but it's not based on the Rock Band.
It's not based on the Rock Band. It's based on cute little Pixies.
No, that sounds fun, though.
Yeah.
Is it, by the way, an all-ages game, or does
it
just happen?
I think it aims young readers, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so there's a lot of board games.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about comics for the week.
Right.
It is not a small comics week.
Yeah, yeah. Do we want to talk about the big one first?
Let's start with the Absolute stuff, because it's been a while on this.
So, sure, sure.
Absolute Batman, Absolute Wonder Woman, Absolute Superman have all been very successful.
Yes.
And
not just successful, but also good.
Good. Yeah, but also like selling out. Like we sold out a Batman day one. We sold out a Superman week one.
Yeah.
We sold out a Wonder Woman day one.
Mm-hmm.
We are still out of Superman number one. We're waiting on a reprint of that. But as of Wednesday, we will have Absolute Batman number one and two.
Yep.
And we have Absolute Wonder Woman number one and two.
Right. Yeah. So new printings have hit of those.
Yep.
Just even as the second issue of Absolute Wonder Woman hits this week.
Yep. And we both really liked that.
Yes, yes. We I think Nick had originally made this comparison, you know, poor lost Nick, to Guy Davis's artwork.
Yeah.
As the big creatures and stuff like that that were introduced in the first one, as there's some new developments and things with that, you get to see more of that Guy Davis vibe.
Yeah, for sure.
It's really so cool looking.
Yep. They're Wonder Woman who's like, she's like the last Amazon. It's almost Kryptonian. She's like, she's the only Amazon.
Yep. But in this, we also get to see, oh my gosh, I can't say his name.
Steve Trevor.
I know it wasn't Steve Rogers.
There, Steve Trevor is interesting, yeah.
Yep. And how that story works. A little bit more information on her weird skeletal Pegasus, which is It's cool because Steve Trevor like tries to goes up to pet it, and yep. it's just so macabre looking.
Yeah, yeah. The revelations about her Pegasus. This one was interesting. I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but what recommended?
Yeah, I, yeah. I really basically, like it's nice to be able to recommend all the entire line so far.
Yeah. Yes, the big book from DC this week is Justice League Unlimited. This is their big realignment. We haven't had a Justice League book in like 5 years, maybe 10. Been a while.
It's been a bit.
Last one I think was Scott Snyder's.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that, but yeah, I think you're right. And this is obviously, and I think we talked about this a little bit before when we were leading up to it, but inspired by the Justice League Unlimited that was so good in the early 2000s or mid 2000s. And so there is a watchtower. It houses at any given time what I would guess would be hundreds of heroes.
Yep.
Moving in and out. They're not all permanently there. You know, they've explained Teen Titans come and go and stuff like that. But essentially, they will now be putting together mission teams from that entire pool, meaning you're likely to get some A-listers, some B and C-listers, and a few, like, almost relative unknowns. And they what they do is this first issue is told from the point of one of those relative yep. unknowns.
Airwave from Austin.
Yes.
Austin, Texas.
Yes, they say, or at least base of operations in yes. Austin, Texas, when you see his yes. ID card.
Yes.
And he is essentially there for the tour, which is also a tour for us. I have seen this format before, and yep. frankly, I like it.
Me too. this is, I mean, like the putting the team together thing, this always works for me.
It's true. It's true. As long as you do it well, I almost always like it.
There's a two-page spread. It's not actually a spread. It's two pages with, like, 8 panels
mm-hmm.
where Flash runs Airwave quickly through everything. So it's like yeah. the room where the Justice Society meets. Which talks about, this was such a cool idea. The Watchtower is not just the Justice League's operation point, but, like, they also have the headquarters for Justice Society and Titans and the Super Family, which I think is that Shazam's family, maybe?
Yep.
And
they mention, you know, as seen last week, the Question as head of security.
The Atom Project, which is referenced in Black Lightning.
Oh, the cool, the Red Tornado
thing. The Red Tornado thing, which is really cool.
So, did we mention that before?
No.
Do we want to say what the...
No, we shouldn't.
Okay. There's a cool
use of Red Tornado.
I agree.
But the center of this is like a disaster that's happening in South Africa
mm-hmm.
that they send a mission team down. It's a heavy hitter team. It's Superman, Wonder Woman, Firestorm.
They've also got Blue Beetle, I think.
Not in this one. He's not on the mission team.
Oh, okay.
That's a different mission.
That's a separate mission.
But they also have Star Sapphire.
Yep.
And they use her powers really interestingly in this.
Yeah, I agree. If just real quick aside, if we didn't already mention Dan Mora, who Mark Waid has been working with
right.
on World's Finest, I think.
Yes.
And maybe another project somewhere in there. But he is like the guy I always like want drawing these guys. You know, he's, you know, you hesitate to say compared to icons like George Perez and stuff like that. But like, he's one of these guys who can draw every one of them. I love how he draws them. Let's see in Firestorm in this, by the way. Firestorm is one of those lesser-known heroes who I always want to see more of. So you were saying, though, about the mission?
I was just saying it's a rescue mission, which I think is interesting. It's like not...
Yes.
There is a bad guy behind it, but it's not... They're not fighting people. They're actually trying to do, like, a rescue thing.
Yep.
Which I think is good. And also worth noting for people that this is also... There is a 4-page... preview of Hush 2 by Jeff Loeb
right.
and Jim Lee in the back. That was an exclusive to this issue.
Pretty notable.
So if you are a Batman fan, you want to get an early look at Hush, I believe this is not going to be in the main book. I think this is a 4-page little preview, essentially. Kind of like a trailer.
That was my understanding when they did like a little video conference call with retailers to yeah. kind of talk about the book at one point.
Yep.
And I think that's the way I understood it. But yeah, I think this is like a big no-brainer for anybody who's like really any stripe of DC fan. You know, it's like if you've been looking for a good Justice League book, this is the one.
Yep. Batman Santa Claus Silent Night was a big surprise for us last year.
Yep.
The trade hits this week. They waited a lot. They waited a year to put this trade out.
I actually when I saw that I was like, had that not hit yet?
Yeah.
And I was like, but no, because I was like, I would have bought that. Yep. We talked every week that came out last week last year about how surprisingly good it was.
Yep.
And so, yes, that's all collected. And then there's the sequel, that first issue that's hitting right now.
Yeah, the sequel is Silent Night Returns, and it is, yeah, it's same writer, Jeff Parker, different artists. I thought Dan Mora did the art on that previous one, but he just did the covers.
Oh,
so the
that's
interior
right.
art was different.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, anyway, yeah, if... It sounds ridiculous, but actually they did a pretty good job into integrating Santa Claus into the superhero universe of DC.
They kind of found a way to think it through and make him a little bit more action-adventure-y and kind of fit within the DC universe. And it was actually pretty cool how they did it.
There is a new Black Canary series called Best of the Best.
I believe it's just a one-shot.
Is it just a one-shot?
Does it say it on the front?
Oh, I thought it was a miniseries.
I might be wrong.
It's a miniseries.
All right.
It says to be continued. So. Right.
Well, maybe that's just a trick.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about that?
Has beautiful artwork by Ryan Suk. Has Black Canary facing off in the ring with Lady Shiva.
Yep.
And I didn't read it because it's by Tom King. But if you don't hate Tom King, which a lot of people seem not to, you might want to give it a read.
Yep. And or if you just want to see Black Canary, one of the top martial artists, face off against Lady Shiva, historically one of the deadliest martial artists, then here's your book.
West Coast Avengers is new from Marvel. I am a huge West Coast Avengers fan. This brings back the Silver Centurion Iron Man, which is the armor that I grew up on. Like, I came in on that Iron Man armor. Brings in the sort of a heroic version of Ultron, which is a West Coast Avengers callback.
Yeah, he was like their first kind of major foe to go up against.
Yep. And then uses like Spider-Woman and Firestar and some of those, so... nice to have the West Coast Avengers back.
Yep.
There is a book from Dark Horse called Welcome to the Maynard. This is by James Robinson and Jay Bone.
Maynard being a fancy hotel for supernatural stuff, magic users.
Like
and
only
things.
People who have magic can see it.
Yep.
And it's from the point of view of a girl who is one of the new bellhops, I think.
Yep. And the way I understood it from when I was reading this list is that she's also like, will become the trainee for the store detective or the hotel detective.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, you know, the reason to kind of, you know, have them involved in adventure-y stuff.
This is a very cute adventure-y kind of thing.
Yep.
There's a new Ghost Machine book by Peter Tomasi and Peter Snejberg called Hornsby and Halo. The premise being that a devil baby and an angel baby are sent down to Earth. The devil baby is given to a nice, kind family, and the angel baby is given to a mean family, and they're testing nurture versus nature.
Yep. Is this part of the Ghost Machine setting?
It is, yes.
Or at least that line.
Yes. This really much feels like a like Orion and
Light Ray,
yeah.
Which was itself based on I can't remember if it was a biblical thing. Like, didn't Moses get swappy swapped?
He probably did.
He was like raised by the Pharaoh and all that stuff.
Yeah, they're always playing pranks like that in the Bible.
They are.
It's the prankster's Bible, Dave.
And Kirby liked he liked to turn to biblical origin story stuff.
He did.
But yeah, it's that the idea of like. To keep the peace, to sort of have a unity and stake from two different sort of warring nations to swap kids.
Yeah.
But is this going to like interact with the rest of the universe, or is it kind of its own?
I think
book?
So, but who knows?
Okay.
Yeah. All right. We also have the fourth issue of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This is Jason Aaron's relaunch of it.
Another good issue.
Art by Chris Burnham. Really nice.
We were both a little taken aback at the opening, seeing poor Donatello, the final turtle, get a spotlight, looking emaciated and sick.
Yeah, he does.
And they said something about this, clearly referencing a past story. Did he do some magic stuff?
Or time travel, or both?
Yeah, he basically is indicating it seems like it took its toll on him. Now, I'm pretty sure he's going to, at some point, go eat a few some burgers and get better. But, he is at an ebb at this point, and yet there's still this fighting spirit in him.
Yep.
As he is, he has been, taken in and captured by this, what is it, backwoodsy gladiatorial kind of arena thing? It was the one that was hinted at in the preview, and it's dark. it's dark. And he may be having some mental problems, too.
Maybe, yes, possibly hallucinating a little bit.
I actually found it pretty satisfying. He is, in his way, he's a badass in this, in a way that's kind of a little unusual for him, but also showcases him as the thinker, him as the guy trying to puzzle things out.
Yeah.
But also him as an altruistic person. and, you know, whether that can survive the dark times that he's trapped in. But really good standalone issue. I think next issue is going to be the sort of... we've seen some of the Brothers United, but not with him yet.
Yeah.
And next issue, I will be very interested to see where they take it.
Yeah, me too. I wonder who the artist is going to be.
Yeah, everyone has... they've had unique artists on all of these. This time it was, what, Chris Burnham?
Chris Burnham.
Yeah. But Jason Aaron writing it all, so it all has a unified vibe to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, all the artists have been good.
This does reveal the villain, who is not the Shredder.
Right. That is true.
This is it's number 18, but it's sort of a first issue. Green Arrow gets a new creative team with Chris Condon, who is the guy who's been writing That Texas Blood and Enfield Gangmaster.
Oh, I forgot that's who that was. I was like, that name is crazy familiar, but I just didn't immediately place it.
And the art is by Montos. Not a name I know, but he's got a little of that...
Sorrentino
vibe, yeah.
And the vibe of the story is to me was the went back to Grell's Longbow Hunters.
Absolutely, yes.
This is kind of a little bit more true crimey kind of, you know, crime and like suspense stuff. Less on the Trick Arrow side of things and more if you liked the Seattle era for Green Arrow, I'd consider checking this out. Which they took some of from for the TV show for Arrow.
Yeah, for sure.
But this is what him doing some more nitty gritty investigatory type stuff, and running up against corruption. There's an interesting like a detective who looks like might be working closely with him as a supporting character. It was a promising first issue.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was a good issue.
Tom Taylor, that first issue was issue 18.
Tom Taylor's second issue of Detective Comics.
Yep.
Which does some interesting stuff. He's definitely doing not what I was expecting him to do. So.
Yeah, but it's been fascinating, and the art by, is it Mikkel Janin?
Mm-hmm.
Crazy good.
Yep.
So.
Jumping over to Marvel, we've got Amazing Spider-Man 62.
Yep, that's the continuation of the Doctor Doom thing where he seems... So I'm not following this right now, and I can't speak to it, but I believe Dr. Doom has, like, empowered him in some ways. In fact, he looks like he's wearing Mystic Doom armor.
He's given some Mystic armor. Basically, he's going to show him how to... He's going to die several times.
Yep.
In order to serve Dr. Doom somehow. I don't know.
I was under the impression he was like, I'm going to give you the power to revive a number of times so that if you get killed during the course of your fighting, you'll be resurrected.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's the classic kind of deal with the devil thing where he's like, oh, well, that sounds great. But Doom, I believe, has reasons for him possibly to die and, you know, probably drawing off magic energy off of it because he's a jerk. Why are you going to be a jerk, Doom?
He's just like that.
Oh, okay. That's what you're saying all Latverians are?
Yep. All Latverians are jerks.
Real nice.
We got several notable second issues. We talked about a few of them, but...
I'm glad Nick died before he was there for that racist anti-Latverian sentiment.
Iron Man number 2, which Iron Man has this crazy, like, steampunk armor that he's using in this one. And he's doing some stuff with magic, which is interesting. There's a crazy magic guest star. People have been seeming to be digging this new direction on Iron Man. And then Mystique number 2, which sees her meeting up with an old member of the Brotherhood.
Oh, yeah.
As promised on the sort of the cover.
Yep.
Gil Simone's Uncanny X-Men hits issue 6. And then, Dave, you have another single issues?
Let's see. Issue 3 of Dazzler.
Right.
Is that Lila Shaney?
I believe it is.
It looks like it to me, but I have not gotten around to reading it yet. That series by Rick Remender and Brian Posehn Grommets, the 80s skateboarder series, is one issue left to go after this. And
yep.
So there's a new one there. And was this this week, Uncanny X-Men number 6?
I just mentioned that.
All right, I wasn't paying attention. I got my own thing. I'm looking at my phone.
And then we got some notable collections. Batman by Tom King. They're doing the big trades of his Batman stuff.
Okay.
DC Finest, The Flash. This is the early Flash stuff being collected. That's DC's new, like, epic format, essentially.
Right. And so this is collecting, like, Silver Age Flash stuff? Okay.
Yep. Doctor Doom by Cantwell and LaRocca. This is the Doctor Doom series they did recently.
Yep. I think that was pretty well liked.
Yep. And people were looking for Doom after Robert Downey Jr. was announced as Doom.
Right.
So this is only a few months late.
Robert Doomy Jr.
Robert Doomy Jr. Joe the Barbarian gets a new trade. This is a Grant Morrison and Sean Murphy thing.
Mm-hmm. I had forgotten about that book, but I remember that having a following.
It was fun. JSA Compendium 1, this splits like the first like 30 issues of
this is the Geoff Johns era, but also had James Robinson and what, David Goyer?
Correct, yes. Yeah. This is sort of when JSA became back and became prominent and became a sort of legacy team again.
Yeah. That was a big time. Like that was basically all modern JSA stuff goes back to that. And so this is gonna be a pretty good, if you like those dudes, this is a collection to have.
There's also a new Dogman.
What's the deal with Dogman? Is it getting like a movie or something?
Getting a movie, yep. It's also one of the most popular things in the store.
Right. If you've got kids, nieces, nephews, etc., you may have heard of it. So a new one is kind of a big thing.
Yep.
Especially right in time for the holidays, meaning be a good gift for that Dogman kid in your life.
Or adult.
Or that Dogman adult.
And then the last thing I want to mention
is... It's not Dog Boy, it's Dog Man.
Dog Man. You're the Dog Man now, dog.
Man, that was a deep cut reference.
No one knows that.
Do people even... What was... It was from a movie.
It's a Sean Connery movie.
What was that called?
What was it called?
It was a university thing, right?
Yes.
And then it became the name of a website in the early heydays of memes.
Yes.
Like in the early 2000s.
Yes. Finding Forrester.
Finding Forrester, yes. If you don't know anything about it, please type in "You're the Man Now, Dog" website and meme into Google and just while away an hour or so and basking in the weirdness of it's peanut butter jelly time.
Yes. The last thing I want to mention is this book called Appendix N, Revised and Expanded. I'd never heard of this.
Okay.
It is Weird Tales from the Roots of Dungeons and Dragons. So it's an anthology of short stories, short fiction, and also like little snippets and that kind of thing that were Gary Gygax's inspirational reading when he created D&D. So,
oh, interesting.
It's got like Fritz Lieber, H.P. Lovecraft, Michael Moorcock.
This kind of famously at the back of the original Dungeon Master's Guide.
Yeah,
I guess was there his list of for more ideas, read this. But it's like, wonder where they got like. Lawful Law and Chaos as the kind of twin poles. Yep. Well, it's in one of these books.
So yeah, it is drawing upon the original list of inspirational reading in the first DMG from 1979. But this is the actual like short fiction and fragments that tie into it. So it's like these are the stories, which is kind of cool. If you want some old school fantasy to sort of get a look at sort of the what inspired
Gary Gygax. You get into the headspace like a criminal profiler of Gary Gygax,
and then you can catch him for whatever he's done.
Probably something with the Tomb of Horrors.
Right. He is also, of course, dead.
It's going to make catching him easier. I'm going to have this
wrapped up. We know right where he is.
I'm going to have this wrapped up within 24 to 48 hours.
I'll find him, Chief. Dave, that's enough. Give me your gun and your badge. And where did you get those anyway? All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some games and some movies and stuff. All right, so normally this is where we do trailers and things.
Yes, but guess what? No trailers this week, and no big news or anything like that. They didn't announce any stuff. So I suppose Nick having departed this earth for his trip.
Yes.
He didn't miss out on a whole lot there.
That's right.
So we'll skip that side of things and just jump right into the topics, what we've been playing, watching, etc.
Yeah.
Which has a rare overlap this week.
There's a couple things that we actually ever talked about before, but both of us didn't get to talk about them.
Right.
So let's start with Creature Caravan, which I talked a little bit last week in part of my BGGCon overview.
Yeah.
But then, Dave, you got a rare board game night.
I got a rare board game night. Yeah, This is from one of those guys who, a game designer who's, I've played a number of his games, Ryan Lockett.
Mm-hmm.
He's prolific. He's also a kind of a Renaissance man who both designs the games, often does the art for them.
Yep.
And he's a talented artist as well.
Game designer and drawer.
And his games are often set in the fantasy world of Arzium. And so he's kind of created a world setting too, which also had an RPG that hit the other week. But anyway, Creature Caravan was... my brother gets a lot of these. He kickstarts them and stuff, and so I've played these occasionally through him.
Wait, does your brother have the fancy Kickstarter edition with the zombies, with the little...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the little actual meeple zombies.
Dave, I regret to inform you that I'm going to have to steal that from your brother.
Well, I already talked to them about getting you in on the game at some point.
This is the version I played. Before we get into the game, I didn't realize it's the fancy Kickstarter edition.
Oh.
So when I got mine, it's got boring cardboard tokens and stuff. And it's still a great game. It's very pretty.
Sounds like dog shit.
But the Kickstarter one has these really cool, like, tokens. Like, the zombies have little purple ribbons on them.
They're creepy looking.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is a game where the board kind of spreads out like a wide horizontal thing because it's meant to showcase this... kind of like dangerous series of valleys and mountains and this stretch of land in the fantasy world of Arzium.
It's being plagued by ember zombies.
Ember zombies, which are a unique creature to the area, which are actually these like kind of like charcoal husks of humanoid creatures with like little some kind of fairies.
Ember fairies
yes. in them, yeah. Part of the cool,
mean
weird
fire
lore.
Fairies.
There is a side of Arzium, his fantasy world, that is kind of Studio Ghibli-esque and like can look lighthearted on the surface, but there's also some little darker pockets and elements in there, and these ember zombies sound like no joke.
Not unlike Miyazaki, who also had
That's true. He does the All Ages things. He also does darker stuff like Mononoke, so... Yeah.
But yes, you are a caravan. You are trying to get creatures from this...
Like, you're picking them up as you go along.
You're picking them up, and you're trying to get to Eastery, the city that is protected by a magical barrier that keeps the ember zombies out.
Did you say not Eastery?
I said Eastery.
Weird.
It may be Eastery, I don't know.
But anyway, yes, you have to travel across this land. It's a little bit of a kind of a Westward Ho kind of vibe. Yep.
What'd you call me?
You heard me. Westward Ho. And these things, the people you'll be picking up are, you know, can be anything from like just like a sort of human type person who might be like a hunter or a trapper or something, to finding another carriage, to creatures and like monsters.
Most of them are weird creatures.
There's weird, like, you can find ghosts and cyclopses.
There's a fish folk who's a cook.
Yep. And I had a lazy cyclops in the mix.
Yep.
And by the way, the little tags on them are all relevant during the course of the game and might like synergize with other ones.
Yep.
It is a sort of worker placement game, but it's also what they call specifically a tableau builder, which is to say you can, generally speaking, acquire up to 12 of the creatures as you go across the land, and they usually add something to you or help you modify and enhance the caravan you've already got going. So in some ways, each person is kind of doing their own thing. But it is possible to tap resources before other people do.
Yep.
There's certain magical fruits and things you might pick up ahead of time. Some cards and things that might interact with each other. But in general, you're not going to be like fighting your opponent for spaces. It's not that kind of game. A little bit maybe here and there of resource swiping. But you're trying to sort of engine build with your worker placement to create the coolest caravan. I can see, having played it just once, how your options are going to change wildly depending on the early cards you get.
Yep.
There is some luck to it. You do roll on your turn, and you create a little dice pool that you use to use the dice to trigger certain actions. You'll see the little dice icons on there. And, like, let's say my lazy Cyclops, I can trigger him on a 3 or more. So any dice I have that's 3 or more, I can use to activate him. But if, more powerful cards, you might be able to trigger on, like, just a 1 or a 2.
Mm-hmm.
And you even have some ways of slightly adjusting that as time goes by. But, you end up with these weird, unusually themed things, and you can fight the zombies or not. You can, let me ask you, Randy, in the game that you played, obviously we were kind of both learning it in these early games. You've played it
twice.
What's one of the strategies you had?
I mean, the first time I played, I was just kind of figuring out what I did. I didn't know what to do.
Yep.
The second time, one of the first cards I had was a card that lets you buy any number of creatures that have certain tags, like shy, nocturnal, tiny. There's like 6 or 8 different tags at like one less food. So I got that first.
Is that the one that's like the scholar?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, she's like a zoological scholar or something.
Yeah, so it's like she can attract people to your caravan a little easier.
Yeah, you get the kind of the weirdos come in more easily when she's around.
And then I had somebody else. Usually my opening hand will sort of dictate what I'm doing. Like, I had somebody else that was like a character that was deadly.
Yep.
And it's like, it's worth no points at the end of the game. Or it was like 8 points if I had 3 deadly. Yes. So I wanted to make sure and get enough of deadly creatures. Yep.
I was doing that same thing, and near the end of it, when I was like, I was acquiring cards fast.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I was using cheap cards, and you can get those out on the field faster. But to some degree, that was risky because then if I like found better cards later on, then I might want to rethink it.
And you're stuck. You can't change.
You're like, stuck with
you
it.
You get 12 cards, no more, unless you get one of the rare cards that let you change that.
But I did have for the engine that I was building. And by the way, I think we can probably safely say we both really like this game.
Oh, great game! Yeah,
it's super fun.
Even if you got crap cardboard zombies instead of cool ones like your brother got.
Common problem for people. Mm-hmm. I had multiple means, or like at least one of the first cards I put down was this little goofy raven.
Mm-hmm.
Very cheap.
I like the raven. I had the raven.
The raven lets you just pull one extra card at the beginning of your turn, and it's that much, you know, you can use it to trade in. If you get a like extra card, you can. There's multiple different sort of ways to buy things in this, whether it's with food or with money. Or what was the, like, what's one of the others? Like,
there's
prestige
books.
Or something?
There's book or bags.
Or bags, yeah. Like supplies or something like that. And, but yeah, so the Raven is just getting you extra cards to choose from. And I had one or two of the other things I recruited allowed me to, like, oh, anytime I play this, just draw two cards.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was turning up a lot of cards, which I would then try and turn into. You know, I would either trade the cards in for, like, food or gold, or use them, you know, like, kind of keep them in my hand till I could see when's a good time, you know, do I have enough, like you said, Randy, like, deadly or other types of characters where they're going to synergize when I put them down.
Right.
I played, I would say, a friendly first game where we discussed our hands and our strategies.
Yeah.
And it worked really well by paying close attention to what my brother was doing in it. I kind of got a sense of the game of, like, his strategy and mine. I had a very misfit band of creatures, and we were actually good zombie fighters, whereas his strategy was generally to avoid zombies, and he was more of a gearing up with supplies. He had the, like, the little tiny fairy things where you can actually hold more of them in your hands.
Yep.
I can see how it's going to play so differently with different cards I have that, like,
for sure.
Those games like Scythe or Dune or anything else like that where it's like, it could vary wildly based on what you start your hand with.
Yeah.
And that makes me want to play it immediately again.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited to play this again. Also, came out at the same time, David. I think we both, either you and I picked this up or maybe Matt got it as well. But
yeah, yeah.
The World of Arzium RPG.
Yes.
Which is a very different kind of, like, as I look through, it's like, it's got all the different character classes or
there's, like, right out of the gate, like, 20 different possible player races
or
so.
Yeah,
yeah. Note, it has both frog folk and toad folk.
And toad folk, yeah, they're different. They're different.
It is lightly D&D-esque in the sense that there's, like, about 5 ability scores and there's, you know, some sort of bonus feats. But, like, there's a few interesting twists in it. Like, for instance, when you... It actually incorporates some of the kind of game mechanics that show up in Ryan Lockett games.
Yeah.
Which is to say, trading one resource for another and deciding how to allocate resources. So, like, when you do combat in this, or do skill tests, you will roll a die, but you can add to it the numbers from your ability scores.
Yeah.
Let's say you have, like, an agility of 5. You can literally take 2 of those 5 agility points, which at least temporarily you actually permanently... you take from your agility, and you add them to the roll, and then your agility is now effectively down to a 3, or at least as far as what you can add on to rolls as bonuses until you do a rest. So they mean to, you know, create reasons for the team to rely on each other, to rest, travel across the land having adventures.
Yep.
And there's a cool, like, gazetteer type of thing at the end, and I think a starter adventure.
Yeah, there is a starter adventure for sure.
And obviously lots of beautiful illustrations.
I got this mainly because I was so into Creature Caravan and some of the other games he's done.
Uh-huh.
Like, I wanted to see what the world looked like.
Yeah.
But as I read the rules, I'm like, oh, I kind of want to run this game. Like, it looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. I even thought it was interesting that they divide each day into, like, morning, afternoon, night, and evening and night.
Yeah.
And I noticed that one of the abilities you can take is, like, you can be, like, a night owl. I took note of this because that's what I am.
Uh-huh.
Where you get, like, +1 to all your rolls at night. And you can see that this is, like, not a typical thing feat you would have in D&D, but it feels very fitting for his slightly dark fairy tale setting,
for sure.
Which is kind of the vibe of a lot of his stuff. But anyway, Creature Caravan's super good, and everyone should try it.
Y'all talked about this. You and Nick talked about this already, but I just watched Alien Romulus.
Right.
For the first time. It's been floating around out there. I was waiting for it to come, and it came to Hulu, I think, has it?
Yep. I think it originally hit, like, Halloween-ish.
Yeah.
By Fede Alvarez.
Yes.
Who I had never seen any other movies.
Me neither.
From him, except for this one.
And I'd heard mixed reviews on it, but I've actually... Yeah. A lot of people I know seem to have really enjoyed it, and I definitely fall in that camp. I watched this and thought... I understand people like it. It is kind of a greatest hits, like down to like there's a line. There's some lines that are straight out of Bishop and Ripley at the end of Aliens.
Yep,
they're referencing.
You know what? Well, the weird thing to me, there is that aspect, but it's almost like not until like the last 15-20 minutes.
Right.
It felt pretty original to me up till then, which is what won me over and why I kind of allowed for in that last quarter for them to do some greatest hits callbacks.
Yeah.
If they hadn't established so much good faith with the build-up to it and the characters and stuff, I think I would have been, like, annoyed by it. But because there's not too much but before that, I was able to let it slide.
One of the things I liked about this, and this is one thing that it's... I haven't seen all the Alien movies, like the...
Certainly not the newer ones. Ridley Scott ones with, like, the Prometheus aliens and all that.
But you go back to the very first Alien, and there was very much a lot of the sort of blue collar in space kind of thing. Yep. Like the, you know, when are we getting shares? The company's the worst, that kind of thing. And they really haven't done, like, Weyland-Yutani's been, like, an evil corporation.
Right.
We haven't seen, like, what it's like to live in this world. So opening with, like, this girl and her, like, busted-ass robot that she considers her brother...
Yep. And you say robot, but just to remind people, it's the android type thing.
The synthetics, yeah.
Yeah, like Bishop and Ash and all that stuff.
But the two of them are basically like making they're living on this harsh mining world.
Yep.
And she is like, I've done all my hours. This means I can get off the planet now. And she goes to the company, and the company is like, oh, no, you need double the hours to get off the planet.
Right. They basically change the rules as they see fit, clearly.
It's essentially indentured servitude.
Right. It's horrific when you see it. Yeah. And because this world looks like a shit place to live.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that
gives you... There's a real sense of desperation.
That gives you the desperation of her and her friends who, like, basically steal a shuttle and go up to this giant Weyland-Yutani ship that's in orbit that's, like, been abandoned.
Yep. And their only goal, I thought, was a pretty reasonable one.
Yeah, they're just like, we're going to go to a different system.
But then not just with the ship. They want the sleeper pods.
They need the sleeper pods, yeah.
They need a ship where they can... Because it's still going to take, like a year or something. Or, like...
That's 9 years.
Or 9 years, that's right.
Yeah.
So they're like, we got to conk out for this, and we need something that can do that.
Yep.
But this brings us to, I think we can probably say at this point, if we didn't before, when Nick and I talked about it, the initial alien threat that kind of was, that had been on board that ship, was like the alien from the first movie still alive. Crazily having like, maybe Nick and I did talk about this, like secreted some kind of substance around itself, so it was almost like encased in amber. And so, they saw it out, and it's still alive. And I was like, that's crazy. But it does fit that sort of, like, you know, like, especially what we know about, like, how tardigrades and stuff can survive now. They can literally survive in the vacuum of space. Yeah. And so, I thought that was something that could have been done stupid, but was actually well done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this motley crew that they go up with, they're not all super great people.
No, the guy who was being mean to her robot brother was really awful, but they gave a reason why he did it. I'm like, oh, you know what? I could see where you'd probably hate all androids after that. Yeah.
Yep, they gave a reason for it.
I mean, Ripley didn't like synthetics for the same reason.
That's true.
But they give him the, like, I prefer the term artificial person, just like Bishop.
Yep. And we should say, I think, talked about this, like, I feel like what's his character's name?
Danny?
Is it Danny?
No. It's because his name is Andy. He's ND something.
Okay,
and they call him Andy. Yeah.
So when you first meet him, like, it's kind of like he was a malfunctioning android or like an older model kind of declined a bit.
He seems like he was like a person with like mental difficulties.
Right. Yeah. You don't know what it is, but you might say yes. He's got some sort of issue. He's a little bit off. You will find pretty quickly what the deal is.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's like the secret weapon of the whole movie.
Yeah.
That the actor playing him, I think, put in more acting than almost anybody ever has in an Alien movie, because he's called on to, at various times, things sort of like something will overwrite his program, or there will be like some update or something like that, and he'll become different for a while.
Yeah, that's the really cool ideas that are in here. Like, he gets a piece of scrap. And they find these like fancier chips that let him upgrade his programming, and he's like a different character.
Yeah. And yet there's a real connection with him. he tells these kind of like bad dad jokes early on.
Yep.
The first one of which killed me. It was like so dumb. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And
also, they did add some new stuff. Like they had the guns, but the guns have like an auto aim function.
Yep.
And we haven't seen that before. I thought that was super cool. Or was that in something else?
No. Well, they had mentioned that the smart guns were supposed to do that.
Yeah.
But they had certainly never shown it the way that this was.
I thought that was super cool.
I'll also say this, there's a sequence, and I won't get too into the detail, but. Well, I loved the sequence that they did with the facehuggers. I thought that was incredibly tense, even though, yes, I've seen a facehugger chase somebody before.
We've never seen them like that, though. We've never seen, like a bunch of them.
A swarm of them, and also presented not quite so indestructibly as that one alien in Aliens.
Yes.
So that you can, like, swat them away.
Yeah.
You can, if you're quick enough, you might be able to make it. And then also, there is a sequence where they have to kind of move through a room of them, and there's a question of kind of some temperature control stuff,
mm-hmm.
and whether they might be able to kind of a little like Train to Busan is the only thing I can think of to compare it to.
Yeah.
Might be able to be slightly invisible or mostly invisible to these aliens if they don't get too panicky and change their body heat temperature. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, this is a tense scene. So yeah, a lot of the stuff on that ship as they're exploring it is I got into it fast. I was like, oh, these. What I needed was that kind of character work.
Yeah, agreed.
I think.
I the characters in this are really strong. Also, they faked me out a bunch of times. I'm like, oh, that character's dead. And they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
But they definitely do, like, they're like, oh, they're in
but
danger.
But it's not, like, cheesy.
No, no. Yeah. It's and there's, like, it's pretty brutal.
It's pretty brutal. One guy gets a... I can think of a few pretty bad deaths.
Well, and then the stuff at the end was, like, creepy as hell.
Yes.
Very well done.
I agree.
So.
Yeah, is it actually... although I have some issues with some of the ending stuff, it managed to take some concepts that were from Prometheus and things like that and use them in a way that I actually thought was for once interesting with that stuff. So yeah, I'm glad you dug it.
If I was ranking them, I think this would be number 3 for me.
Yeah, that's probably where I'd put it too. Like, the good stuff in it is really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Last few things are things that only I have seen, so I'm going to comment, and Dave's going to ask me questions.
Yep, sure.
I saw Wicked Part 1.
Oh, yeah. So
I did see this in theaters.
I have seen this live, performed on their tour show, about a decade or more ago.
So I have never seen the musical nor read the books.
And by the way, it's a little bit blurry in my head. I don't know if you know this, though. You know, so there's the original Oz books from, 1900.
Yeah.
And then there was the book that Wicked was based on that came out in, the 80s,
yes.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried reading it one time, and I was like, oh, I don't like this at all.
My friend who I went to the movies with, she does not like the books, but she loves the musical.
Yeah, and it's really two very different beasts. I would not assume that liking one would mean you'd like the other.
Yeah.
They changed it notably, and I think in almost all cases for the better for the musical. So, Randy, did you enjoy the musical?
Quite a bit. And I know two songs. I know Defying Gravity and Popular.
Okay, yeah.
I really didn't know much about it. The trailers hadn't given me much to go on. I just know that it's like Glinda the Good Witch and Elphaba, who will turn out to be Wicked Witch of the West.
Yep.
And they're buddies at school.
Yep.
But it starts off and they're like frenemies.
Yes.
Actually, they're all right. They're all right enemies. There's a song.
They're arriving at, essentially the university,
both,
right?
They both get there. There's a song that's like, there's this, like, what's this feeling? Oh, I hate you. Which is pretty great. The casting's phenomenal. The guy who's, the prince or whatever, he's really well cast. The guy from Bridgerton, I guess.
Okay.
He does a really good job. Ariana Grande kills it here.
Okay.
She's fantastic.
Yeah.
There's especially some bits later on where she's starting to realize that Elphaba's not what she thought she was, that she really plays well. She really does great on Popular, which is key to hitting it. Cynthia Erivo, I think is her name, who plays Elphaba. She's also great.
Yep.
They cast this really well.
By the way, it tells you something about the quality of the original one, that they could have a character with the unusual name of Elphaba, and that would become an iconic, popular character.
Yeah. it's beautiful. They definitely went all out on the budget. It looks spectacular.
Is it super CG in...
not really. I mean, they have the monkeys.
It almost has to be.
They have the winged monkeys and all that. But I feel like a lot of it's practical sets. It feels... I mean, there's definitely some CG in there.
It didn't feel like... there's a certain kind of ugly CG that was going around, 10, 15 years ago that was, Oh, they do like a Clash of the Titans remake, and it was like cheesy CG.
No, this feels very real. Like when she goes to the Emerald City, there's this awesome like steam powered train that picks her up, and it is a beautiful design.
Okay,
like, it looks great. It probably was CG,
but I think I've mostly been hearing that like this is like the budget is used well.
Yeah. Well, I went on what essentially was opening night.
Yep.
With a theater full of probably former theater kids. Probably.
did they have to put up the no singing sign?
Nobody sang along.
Okay.
But everybody did clap at the end.
Okay.
So it was.
And
it
that's
was,
even what, so the fact that it is a half movie, you know, that it is a the part one kind of movie.
It makes sense then where it does, and I'm glad they did it, because I think I can't imagine what they would have cut out. In fact, they added songs. They added a couple songs into this. I can't imagine what they would have cut out. I mean, there's nothing in where I'm like, oh yeah, you could have cut this and gone to one movie. Like, this feels like it needs this much room. Okay. And part two comes out this next year, so it'll be good. And it was a very satisfying watch.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure how long their wait there would be for this second
part. I think they filled it back to back.
Okay, so they're moving along.
And there's one bit, I want to spoil it, but, you know, like, Avengers Endgame has that moment that, like, where, like, Cap, like, gets the hammer.
Yes.
There was a moment like that for Wicked fans.
Oh.
And the person I was with, she's such a huge fan, she was freaking out. It was so much fun to watch her, like, enjoy this moment.
Is this a cameo?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But it's very well done, and I would definitely, if you're a fan of the musical, definitely go see this.
I should catch this on the big screen.
Yeah, and it is worth seeing on the big screen. I really enjoyed it.
If somebody doesn't like musicals, any chance they might like it?
No, why would you go see it if you don't like musicals?
I don't know. They're hateful people, Randy,
yes.
You know?
Who don't like musicals? Monsters. Absolute monsters.
I heard sociopaths.
Yeah, sociopaths, maybe. Monsters. And Nick, which is why we had to kill him.
Nick, yes. Poor lamented Nick.
Poor lamented Nick.
Who is in Costa Rica.
I also watched a Netflix show called Man on the Inside.
Uh-huh.
This is Mike Schur, who did The Good Place, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Parks and Rec.
That guy's got a solid track record, I suppose.
Along with Ted Danson, who also has a bit of a solid train record.
I remember watching the trailers for this, and it looked pretty good. Maybe not like quite as immediately appealing as his other stuff, but...
So, it's not as funny as his other stuff.
Okay.
There's some cute moments, but basically what it's about is Ted Danson is an older former engineer. He is sort of living a quiet, retired life, and his daughter, played by someone from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, whose name I always forget, Mary Elizabeth Ellis, I think, is her name.
Sure.
She's like wanting him to get out, and he gets recruited by this PI... who has been hired by the guy who played Sean in Good Place.
Okay.
His name I can never remember. He's Kevin in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
He's concerned about his mother. She had a piece of jewelry stolen from her room at this upscale retirement home in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
So this detective, who's this like 30-something woman, is like, I need a man on the inside. I need someone to go in.
Yep.
And she winds up using a classified ad, and she hires Ted Danson to go in and basically pose as a new retiree,
right,
and help figure out who stole this necklace,
right.
And in the meantime, he goes in, he meets all these people and becomes friends and sort of gets out of his shell, like he's been in this sort of solitary living condition, that kind of thing. It's got a lot to say about getting older and feeling lonely and that kind of thing, and being useful.
Yep.
The head of the agency is played by Stephanie Beatriz.
Okay.
You may know from Brooklyn Nine-Nine as Rosa.
Okay.
This is her and her actual, like, doing her real voice, not her Rosa voice.
Oh,
and she's sort of sweet and fun and totally different character.
Interesting, yeah.
And she's really good in this. And, like I say,
would you say it's a kind of lighthearted drama / suspense?
But it's almost like there's not any suspense. Like who's stealing is not, it's not a big
whodunit.
There's no danger to it, really.
Right.
It's more about sort of like relationships, about the relationship he has with his daughter, the relationships that all these older people have with each other.
You're not expecting a brutal shootout at the end.
There's no shootout at the end. it was a lot of fun. I binged this in one day. It is a sitcom today, so it's like 30 minutes.
Okay, yeah.
30-minute episodes. But I would just recommend, if you're a Mike Schur fan at all, this is...
Or Ted Danson fan, maybe,
Or Ted Danson fan. This is not up to, like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine or Parks and Rec or
And the
Good
vibe
Place.
Sounds intentionally different, too.
But it's fun. And they're going to do a second season, I think, and I will definitely watch it.
Right on. That guy, he seems to know what's going on and whatever it is he does.
And the last thing I want to mention is I've played a couple of legacy games recently. We talked about legacy games.
Yep.
But for those who need a recap, they are games that you play over a series of episodes, usually like 12 games.
Yeah, 12 to 20 games of a certain type. And usually with stuff that you might like, little secret packs to open or things that'll change it. So the game kind of evolves as you based on your decisions and every, who wins
everyone
and who loses.
Plays differently.
Yeah, we've played the pandemic, some of the pandemic ones, and you played a few others?
I have now.
Okay, all right, so what do we do this
time?
So
I played Sagrada, and we have both of these in stock. I played Sagrada Artisans.
Uh-huh.
Sagrada is the game where you're making stained glass windows by doing dice drafting.
Yep.
It's a very pretty game.
Yep.
Sagrada Artisans is using coloring books. So you're rolling dice and then you're coloring on your little coloring books. You're playing architects over generations who are trying to create a great wonder.
Okay.
And you have these little cards that represent tools you can use and that kind of thing. But you're basically drafting dice and coloring in your patterns. Each page is different. They've got a different look to them. As it goes on, we're about, I think, three or four games in. It's definitely getting more complicated. There's a lot of different rules and different changes. But
that was one of the things I enjoyed about... but it was also slightly tricky when we were playing the Pandemic Legacy game, because we decided we would play one game a month, or essentially a small burst of games a month each month.
Yep.
But that meant that there was, 4 weeks to
forget all the rules.
Because there was little changes every time to as the pandemic situation of the game evolved.
Yeah.
But you're doing this.
We played it at a friend's place, and then we played it at BGGCon, which is a couple of weeks later.
Okay.
I don't know when we're gonna play it again.
We'll see. We'll see how this plays out. But
the other game I played is Clank Legacy.
Oh, okay.
Which. Clank, I've played a few times now, and I know it's basically a deck builder where you're dungeon delvers.
Yep.
Clank is the noise your adventurers make. It's represented by cubes, and then the cubes go into a bag when the dragon attacks based on the clank.
So the louder you are, the more cubes you have, the more likely you are going to be found by the dragon.
And what you're trying to do is
This is another game I need to play, just at least the basic Clank, because I like deck building games, and the fantasy theme sounds cool.
It's really great. And so you delve into this dungeon, which is a map on the board, and you go in, and you're trying to get an artifact that's worth there's a few artifacts in there. One of them's worth the most points, some is worth less. You're trying to get a really good artifact, and then bolt for the surface, everyone else to die. because once people are on the surface, they start doing dragon attacks every turn.
True D&D murder hobo style.
Yes. And if you make it out, you get a bonus points.
Okay.
So you don't necessarily win, but you're more likely to win if you're the only one who survives.
Mm-hmm.
So Clank Legacy brings in the Acquisitions Incorporated, the Penny Arcade.
Yeah,
they're sort of corporate D&D adventurers kind of thing.
Yep.
I joined in somebody's game that they had played four of the ten.
Yeah.
So I'm joining on game five.
Oh, interesting.
And they just went to the underworld. And basically it's semi-co-op in that you're all trying to get out of the dungeon and that kind of thing. You're exploring the dungeon and there's a story building in there.
Yep.
But you're still one person is going to win.
Yes. I've played games like that before. I remember Marvel Legendary was like that where... Yeah, you kind of had to all work together to stop the villains, but somebody was going to stop the most villains.
Yeah. but anyway, there's a lot of story stuff. You go, there's numbers on the board. You go to that numbered space and you read a thing from the booklet, and then that'll add stickers and stuff and change the board.
Oh, that's cool.
So I found a shrine that wasn't on the board and it's now stickered on the board.
Yeah. Love that.
We found a guy who was sending us on a quest that we could do and that kind of stuff. And it's got that sense of humor that Penny Arcade had too. So there's a little bit of that sort of goofy humor it was a lot of fun. I definitely recommend it.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. All right. That's all I got this week.
All right. I'm going to raise this Dr. Pepper for Nick.
Yes.
I will keep him in my heart.
Cheers
until
to Nick, who's
he
dead.
He returns next week.
And also in Costa Rica.
Yes. What does that say about Costa Rica?
It's either heaven or hell.
Or perhaps
purgatory.
We'll debrief Nick next week when he returns from the dead.
Yes. And everybody have a good Thanksgiving.
Yep.
Or if you don't celebrate Thanksgiving, a good Thursday.
Yep.
And we will be closed on Thursday, but then on Friday we'll have our Black Friday sale.
Except we'll be a little later, but we're not open early, I guess is the only reason.
We're open at 11, we close at 8. Come out and see us, say hi,
please
buy
do.
Some stuff. Remember to buy as many statues as you can carry.
Yes.
And give them out to everyone you know.
That's right. Be definitely at the soup kitchen.
All right. Until next time.
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.